హరే కృష్ణ, వెల్కమ్. టుడే ఐ యామ్ గోయింగ్ టు టాక్ అబౌట్ ద ట్రూత్ బిహైండ్ క్రియేషన్. At least that's my plan. We marvel at God's creation here in the material world, and we think how wonderful it is. And it is. But do we ask why? What is the purpose of this creation? This material creation? Is it necessary? Is this our ultimate destination? These are good questions. So, I've sometimes touched on this in the past. I'm going to go to the Bible, where they talk about original sin. The original sin of the living beings that has put us here, taken us from paradise and put us down here. Right? So, for those of you who have studied classical English literature, years ago, in 1667, the poet John Milton wrote a very compelling book. Probably some of you have read it. It's a monumental work, and it's called Paradise Lost. You heard of it? A few years later, he wrote Paradise Regained. Which is good. At least he's got, you know, the antidote. So, it's a wonderful poem. It's iambic pentameter. It doesn't rhyme. It's like blank verse. Amazing. So, in this monumental work, Satan challenges the idea of God's supremacy. So, there they are, all are in paradise. Everything's quite nice. And so we have the angels and the archangels, and Satan's one of those. In fact, he's a heavy hitter. He's probably one of the archangels. One morning he wakes up and he goes, wait a second, you know? Why is this guy in charge? What about me? Why shouldn't I be in charge? Why does he get all the glory, all the accolades? So, what's he got that I haven't got? So there's the initial flaw. What is that flaw? Envy. Envy. Okay? So, can it be greed? No. They're all living in paradise. What don't you have? You're enjoying everything God's enjoying. You're not missing out on anything. Can't be greed. Can only be envy, right? Envy leads to enmity. Enmity leads to enemy. That's where it all comes from. He's my enemy. So where there is envy present, can there be also love? Yes or no?
No.
How? Oh, we'll just tuck away this envy back in the dark corner of the room here and pretend it's not there. And pretend we're all having a love fest. There's no pretending in paradise. Right? So, let's look at the word Satan. It has a Sanskrit root, naturally. And what is that root? Sat, right? Sat. What does Sat mean? Sat means truth. It means spirituality. It means honesty, integrity, it means eternality, it means all those things, right? From sat we get in Sanskrit sadhu. What's a sadhu? A holy man, a holy person, right? And in Spanish, we get what? Sant, masculine, and santa, feminine. Saint. In English, saint. Same root, right? So who is this guy Satan? He's the guy who's lost his sat. In Sanskrit, we wouldn't call him Satan, we call him asat. He's got no sat left. So that we get, in English, they say Satan. Right? Now, if you go to Vedic astrology and you look at planets, what planet has this same root? Tell me.
Saturn.
Saturn. Exactly. And Saturn is famous for being what? For doing what? Bringing you all of that bad karma. That's his job. Your karmic comeuppance, your suffering, your sorrow, your loss, your pain. That's Saturn's job. What is he? Cruel and thankless? Is he a monster? No. Quite the opposite. He's a god. But somebody's got to do the job. That's his task. Saturn. That's what he does. So what happened in our story here, John Milton's story? Satan and his minions, those who followed him, were all driven out of paradise into a hell known as chaos. I love it. He called it chaos. Any chaos going on down here in the material world? Haven't seen any recently? Chaos. What's the opposite of chaos? Order. Or cosmos. We have cosmos, we have chaos. Which do you prefer? Which do you like in your home? Cosmos or chaos? Which do you like in your solar system? You like the sun coming up every day, right? 1 minute later or 1 minute earlier each day. You like that, don't you? That's cosmos. I like it too. So they're driven into a hell known as chaos, and they awakened Satan and his minions in a state of confusion upon a lake of burning flame, according to Milton. Wow. Have you ever felt like you're in a state of confusion and sitting on a lake of burning flame in your life? Show of hands. Oh, only half the crowd. Not bad. Pretty good. Right? And when they had collected their wits, which you do from time to time, right? They constructed a palace for Satan because he's now king. Down here. And because, after all, he insisted upon being king, and that palace was called what? Pandemonium. That's what he called the palace. A state of chaos in a palace called Pandemonium on a lake of burning flame. I mean, what could be better? That's what it's like in the material world. You can say, oh, no, 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 it's not like that at all. Oh, yeah, it is. Prabhupada talks about in the olden days the kings would take a criminal that they'd want to punish, and they'd hold his head underwater, and then they'd pull it up, and then they'd dunk him in again underwater, hold him down there for a while, let him squirm, pull it out again. Now the dunking in the water is being in the material world, in case you're wondering. The pulling it out, where you can catch your breath, is what you call enjoyment in the material world. That's material enjoyment. Oh, thank God, I can get a breath. I get a relief. I get some peace for a minute or two.
Yeah.
And in you go. That's Prabhupada's example. I thought it was pretty effective. So, we're humans. We have to place our faith in someone or something. We have to. Do you place your faith in the weatherman on occasion? In Ireland, it's a little dicey, I know. But, you know, we check the weather. Some of us check it every morning, no? In whom should we place our faith? Who should we accept as our authority? A man has a newborn baby, he and his wife, and then he's called off to war to fight. He gets on a big ship and he goes off to war with several thousand soldiers, and he doesn't come back for 3 or 4 years while he's fighting the war. By this time, the baby grows to be 3 or 4 years old, a little boy, little man. And mom says to him one day, "Daddy's coming home. Let's go down to the dock and see Daddy." Well, he goes down to the dock. He sees this huge ship coming in with thousands of soldiers on it. Which one's his daddy? Does he know? No, he doesn't know. So what does he rely on? He relies on his mother to tell him, to show him by her affection who his father is. Right? Does he accept that? This is your daddy. This is him. Yeah, he does. Well, he's going to say, I don't care for him. I want that guy over there. Well, he's not your daddy. Oh, okay. Well, I guess he'll have to do. He relies on her word. She's the authority. If she doesn't know, I mean, who knows? Right? So, in our modern era, we are taught more and more, increasingly, to place our faith in humans, not God. Don't place your faith in God. He won't help you. Place your faith in humans. Humans in what form? The weatherman? No, a little more than that. Humans who are scientists and have MAs and PhDs in science are studying the cosmos and various other things like evolution and natural selection. We must listen to them and take their authority. Are you not told to do that? Are you not brainwashed to do that from early on? Pretty much. Why wouldn't we place our faith in God? Because a lot of the organizations who represent people and organizations who claim to represent God have lost favor with the people. Because you, the people, say, well, if this is what a representative of God is and acts like and behaves like, I don't want any part of this God business. That's a pretty rational statement, isn't it? That's a logical, rational statement. Why would you? So a lot of people are put off to God. Is it God's fault? He's like an innocent bystander in all of this. He's kind of watching it unfold. No, it's not God's fault. But he gets a bad rap. Why would God let these people represent him? Because he lets them do whatever they want to do. Just like he lets you do whatever you want to do and call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. Whether it's true, false, or imaginary. That's called free will. Don't we all have it? Does he interfere with your free will? No. He doesn't. So, in Krishna consciousness, we place our faith in the Vedas. The Vedas are books of knowledge dating back to at least 6,000 BC, India. The tradition goes back thousands and thousands of years earlier than that, but initially it was a oral tradition, not written down. Why didn't they write it down? Because they didn't need to. Because people had the brain to learn after hearing something repeated once, it would stay with them. We're not very good at that nowadays. So at some stage, they had to start writing stuff down. Okay. The Vedas are considered to be spiritual books, not material. Why? Because they're written in Sanskrit? Yeah. Because they're full of mantras and prayers? Yeah. Because they give information and understanding of God that goes far beyond anything else you can find? Yeah. Because they are apaurusheya. Apaurusheya. What does that word mean? Anybody? Not man-made. The root of that word is purusha, person. Apaurusheya means not man-made, spiritual, coming from God. You might say, well, how do you know it comes from God? I'm going to show you that in a moment. That's easy. So, we might say, yeah, but I'd rather accept the scientists. Well, that's Paurusheya. That's man-made. That's conceived and thought up by man. Is that a problem? No, there's a lot of good people out there. A lot of well-meaning people. A lot of very intelligent people. No question. And a lot of people with a good heart. We know that. The problem is this. All beings here in the material world have four defects. They all do. All of us humans. That's the problem. According to the Vedas. And what are the four defects? Well, here in the material world, our knowledge is subjected to many deficiencies. And if you are a conditioned soul, we are conditioned souls here in the material world. We are conditioned by being in the material world. Again, I'll use the term brainwashed since birth to think a certain way. Many of you wouldn't be sitting here today if you hadn't become more thoughtful and started to question the things that you were taught since you were a child. Yes or no? And you said, wait a second, you know, I used to think that was true, but I don't think that's true anymore. I don't believe in the Easter Bunny either, or Santa Claus. Those things weren't true. All kinds of stuff like that. So you begin to question. A liberated soul, who's no longer conditioned by the material energy, does not possess the four defects. That's why we try to approach a more enlightened being, a sadhu, a saint, a holy person. Why? Because we're looking for someone who, as far as possible, doesn't have these four defects. Or he's going to the source. He's going to a higher source, which is the Vedas. So what are they? What are the four defects? Very important to understand this. Number one, commits mistakes. All humans commit mistakes. Is there anybody here in through the course of their life that has never made one mistake? Show of hands, please. Not one. Maybe only two. Show of hands. What's the joke? I thought I was wrong once, but I was mistaken. You heard that one? It's an old one. So, right? Commits mistakes. We all do. I commit mistakes every day. Do I want to? No, but I do. Number two, imperfect senses. We have imperfect senses. We're very, very proud of our eyes. what's the expression? Sin is believing. They even got a state in the U.S. called Missouri. You know what the motto of that state is? Well, we're the show me state. I'll see it if I believe it. Otherwise, I don't believe nothing. Now, that accent goes a little further south in Missouri, but it's for your effect. So, yeah. Often someone will challenge. Can you show me God? Why don't you show me God? You need the eyes to see God. You need the qualification. God doesn't just appear willy-nilly to anyone and everyone just cause you want to see Him. Doesn't work like that, does it? Everyone, so I'm talking about being invariably illusioned, right? Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped one here. My mistake. See? There you go. I already made a mistake in my presentation. And I went to the next one. Imperfect senses. See? I'm the mistake in progress here for you. So you'll see how this works. So, invariably, illusion means you accept something to be what it isn't. Under the influence of Maya. Maya is the material energy and material nature. Maya means what is not. What isn't true? What is illusion? So what's the big illusion here for all of us? I am this body. That's the number one illusion. Are you a soul? Some of you will accept, yeah, I'm a soul. Many people will not accept that. I'm a body. Okay, so you're Irish, or you're Indian, or you're American, or you're British, or you're Spanish, or whatever you are. For now, in this body, I'm a woman, I'm a man, I'm a whatever. That's a temporary situation. Well, what are you eternally? A soul. So when we mistakenly accept the body to be our reality, then we fall prey to this illusion. Correct? Imperfect senses. So I said, can you show me God? I said that already. How we say, I rely on my eyes to give me proof of things that are. Okay. As soon as we turn out the light, you can't see anything. You can't see your hand in front of your face. How are your eyes helping you now? They're useless. They're only good in certain circumstances. I only believe what I see. Okay, so you don't believe in radio waves, television waves, microwaves. You don't believe in infrared waves or ultraviolet. No, I don't believe in any of that. Why? Because you can't see it. It exists. There's all kinds of things that exist that we can't see, right? So are your eyes the proof? No. Because of your imperfect senses. Here's an example. When a policeman goes to the scene of an accident or a crime, what is one of the first things the policeman does? He interviews witnesses. Who's ever hanging around? Did you see it? Do you see what happened? Can you tell me? So let's say he's got, a half a dozen witnesses there, yeah? And he interviews them all separately. You know the police always interview people separately. There's a reason for that. And out of those six people, typically, will he get exact same six stories? No. He won't. Why? Because they're there to lie and mislead him? I don't think so. Why won't he get the exact same stories? Because of imperfect senses. Imperfect perception. Well, one person thinks they saw this. Oh, that all happened so fast. It was frightening, it was scary, I didn't know what's going on. Next thing I knew, this happened. Right? Can you rely on those senses? No. your senses are so perfect, how come the sun is this big when you look up in the sky? Do you really think the sun is this big? Like a coin? Like a euro? It's not. It's a little bigger than that. Your eyes won't tell you that. Okay. That's number three, imperfect senses. And the fourth one? Yes. Cheating propensity. The cheating propensity. Oh, I don't cheat. That's good. Glad to hear. A lot of cheating going on in politics, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you all kinds of stuff. If you vote for them, will they deliver? Good luck with that. Right? That's only one example. So the cheating propensity. A person may be fool number one, yet he will pose himself as being very intelligent, although it is already pointed out that he is an illusion and make mistakes. He will theorize, I think this and this and this about that. That is my opinion. But he doesn't even understand that his own position in the scheme of things. And these are the kinds of people who invent theories and postulations and speculations, and they write scientific papers, and then they end up in textbooks, and now we have the theory of evolution, natural selection by Mr. Darwin. Has it ever been proved? No, never. Have you found in the fossil record a tsetse fly turning into a frog? No, there's no record of it. Yet this is accepted as truth. Never been verified. It is accepted, as an opposition to creation theory. Of course, any creation theory, no matter what the religion is, takes God into account. Toss all that out and give it to Mr. Darwin. Based on what? Cheating. Imperfect senses. Invariably illusioned. Right? Committing mistakes. So who do you want to follow? A human with a good education? Stephen Hawking? Richard Dawkins? Or do you want to go a little higher than that? It's a choice. It's a choice. You have to make it. Scientists often say, well, you know, we're making great strides toward lengthening the life, longevity, providing greater health. Now we have stem cell treatments, and we have human growth hormone that we grab from fetuses that we steal from the womb, or somebody gives to us. And we have all this great technology, and now we have the human genome, we have all this. Oh, so where are we headed here with all this? Well, we're going to conquer death. Sure you are. Sure you are. How are you going to do that? You going to change everybody's karma? You can go to the causal side of the karma? Why they're here to begin with? You're going to change it all. Okay. Good luck with that. What is the greatest single advancement in material science regarding death up to this point in time? What is it? The nuclear bomb. That's it. Well, that doesn't prevent death. No kidding. But I tell you, you can kill a lot of people a lot faster with one nuclear bomb than you can with anything else. Is that not technology and progress? That's what they do. They're just better at killing and not so good at sustaining. I'm being merciless, aren't I? Prophet was far more merciless than me. I'm going easy. Okay. Truth behind creation. That's what we're talking about. The Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the best books you will ever read in your life. Don't take my word for it. Read it. Twice at least. I read it 60 or 70 times. Still trying to get it all. So I'm going to quote from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between Krishna on your right, God, and Arjuna, a warrior at the outset of a battle where Arjuna didn't want to fight. We talked about this a little bit 2 weeks ago when I was here. So Krishna's statement in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm going to tell you a few so you can think about these. In the 14th chapter, he says, Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtaya samavantiya tasam brahma mahadyomir aham bija prada pita. It should be understood that all species of life, or Arjuna, are made possible by birth in this material nature. Sounds right? And that I am the seed-giving father. Aham bija pradapita. I am the father. Material nature is the womb, the mother. You need a father and a mother, don't you? Even as humans, we need a male energy and female energy. Correct? But the scientists will tell you there was just a big bang out in the cosmos someplace. And when everything kind of cooled and the dust settled, Earth was there. Wow. Well, that's great. I'll tell you what I'd like you to do later on today. I want you to go home to your garage or your garage, as you say here. You know all that junk you got in there? I want you to take some TNT and blow it to smithereens. Don't hurt the neighbors. And when it all comes down and settles back on the ground, I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful Mercedes-Benz where all your junk used to be. Oh, sorry, you like a BMW. Well, as you like. You think that'll happen? You'd say, this guy must be a crackpot if he actually thinks that's going to happen. Well, that's what the scientists say. And everybody accepts it as the gospel. Or some planet imploded and it burst apart, and then all the pieces, you know, they cooled and it coalesced and crystallized and it became dense and somehow ended up in an orbit, and there we were. That's our new planet. Let's go live there. Yeah, right. Sure it did. Okay, next statement by Krishna. Maharshaya saptapurve chatvaro manavastata mabhava manasajata yesham loka imapraja. He says the seven great sages, and before them the four other great sages, and the manus, the progenitors of mankind, come from me. They are born from my mind. And all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. Wow, that is a bold statement for one person to make, isn't it? Who talks like that? Do you know anybody who talks like that? Does your neighbor talk like that? Does your uncle talk like that when he has a couple of drinks? Nah, I don't think so. I don't know anybody who talks like that except God. You know? So, the seven great sages, you know the seven great sages, the Saptarishi? If you look in the sky at night, the Big Dipper, Ursa Major, constellation of the seven sages. Oh yes. You know what a star is? It's a realized soul. That's why it shines. Realized souls shine with their spiritual beauty. You mean it can only happen? No, it can happen to you, and you, and you, and you. Test it out. So that's what he said. Then he says, all living beings populating the various planets descend from them. Oh, no, 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 no. Come on. Darwin says, we all descend from the apes. Well, my friends, you may descend from the apes, but I assure you, I do not descend from any ape. I descend from the gods, from the sages, and so do you. If you want to relate to being an ape descendant, again, your choice. And somehow or other, by the process of evolution, in a billion years, maybe, maybe not. The next statement Krishna says, Sarganam adhira antascha madhyam chaivaham arjuna. Of all creations, this is 10th chapter, of all creations, Arjuna, I am the beginning, the middle, and the end. What is there in this world, no matter what you do, no matter what happens in your life, does not have a beginning, a middle, and an end? Everything does, including your life. Correct? Well, is that what's important? No, he says, I am that. Did your brother talk like that? No. Does your husband talk like that? No. God talks like that. And then he says, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekangshena stito jagat. He says, what need is there for me to tell you all about these various wonderful things here in the material world? You should know that I myself pervade and support this entire universe with a single fragment of my energy. A single fragment I maintain. What? This planet? No, no, no. All the universes. Single fragment. Try to wrap your mind around that. Okay, I'm going to take a single fragment of my nail here because I'm a little itchy on my cheek. And with that single fragment of my nail, I'm going to relieve my itch. Pretty good, huh? You impressed? No. But if I told you I was maintaining the universe, you go, oh, okay, well, now you got my attention. Well, you got my attention. No, is he telling us the truth? Is this who he is? Is this what he does? Or is he, you know, is he having us on? How do you know? You go to your heart. That's how you know. Should we intellectualize and discuss it and philosophically tear it apart? Yeah, yeah, sure we should. We're not stupid. You don't just spoon feed us stuff. We think. Is your brain going to get you there? No. Your brain won't get you there. Because your brain is limited. I don't care how wonderful you are. And I know some of you are wonderful. Your brain won't cut it. It's too small. Infinitesimal. Right? Then he says, I'm trying to give you some proofs here, my friends. I'm taking the scientific approach here. Then he says, Gatir Bhakta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Surit Prabhava Pralayastanam Diddanam Vijamam Yayam. Isn't Sanskrit a beautiful language? Just beautiful. Ain't nothing like Sanskrit poetry. That's poetry. What's he saying here? Again, 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I am the goal. Who talks like that? I am the goal. I am the sustainer. I am the master, the Lord. I am the witness. I am the abode. I am the refuge. And I am the most dear friend. Wow. What of those statements has the greatest appeal for you?
If we all say that together. If we all say that together, I believe it.
Yeah. For me, it's I am the most dear friend. Because who do you want God to be more than anything for you? Your friend. When you think of your most dear friend or friends, aren't those the people that come through for you? Aren't they there for you? Isn't that what that means? Don't they love you even when you commit mistakes? Even when you screw up? Do they still not love you? Generally they do. You might test them a little too far sometimes, but you know. Then same verse. I am the creation, the annihilation, and the basis of everything. I am the resting place and the bijam of Yayam, the eternal seed. Who talks like that? God does. Then he says, Mayad yakshena prakriti suyite satcharacharam etunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. Viparivartate. Again and again. Coming again and again. What does that mean? Ninth chapter. This material nature, Krishna says, which is one of my energies. Is this the whole deal? Oh, no, no, no. Single fragment, he said. One of my energies, this material nature, is working under my direction, O Arjuna, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Chara acharam. Now, have you heard that categorization before? All moving and non-moving beings. Are there other kinds on earth that you know about? What are non-moving beings? Plants, trees, flowers, they don't walk around in one place. And everybody else is moving. That's it. Isn't that everybody? So, it's working under my direction. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. What? What do you mean? I thought there's only one go. You know, you only have one life, you better enjoy yourself. Has anybody ever said that to you? Today? Now you got as many as you need. What, are we running out of lives here all of a sudden? No. As many as you need. You got desires, you got a life. Time of death? Oh God, jeez, I wish I could have done that. No problem. You'll be back. Get him a body. Find a womb. Get a donor. Get him in. Oh, in vitro. Oh, that's the latest technology. Give him a little in vitro. Well, give him some of the fertility drugs. He'll be in there with six other people in the womb. Cozy. Progress. Science. Nah. What does it mean? Manifested again and again. Well, let's find an example, shall we? How about the four seasons? What's creation in the four seasons? Come, come, come. Spring. There's creation, maintenance, destruction, right? Prabhava, pralaya, prabhava, maintenance, stita, and destruction, pralaya. Those three. Spring, new birth, new growth, beautiful. Everybody loves spring. And then summer, fall, there it is. It's yours to enjoy. It's all being maintained so beautifully, right? Then, fall, end of fall, what happens? Everything disintegrates and falls apart. I mean, the leaves fall off the trees, they turn colors, right? Is this not pralaya, a form of dissolution or an ending? Right? Death. It's a death-like process, no? Oh, well, what's winter? Good question. Dormancy. That's what he's saying. Because when the creation ends, and it's a cycle, just like the seasons, God, Vishnu, absorbs the creation, all the material energy, all the souls back into his body. And they go into a state of suspended animation. Who thinks about this kind of stuff? God does. Is this how it works? Well, it's certainly how it works in seasons. Oh, let's extrapolate. Could it possibly work that way with creation? It could, but you can't wrap your mind around 311 trillion years. That's the problem. It's hard to do that. Okay. I'm going to read a few words from Prabhupada here about the creation. In case you don't know, Prabhupada is our acharya, founder of Krishna consciousness. He is my guru. I've been a devotee of Krishna since 1972. And I was fortunate to be initiated by Prabhupada. He's long gone. He left the planet in 77. But his words resonate powerfully in our lives, certainly in my life. I never in all my years met a man like him, ever, ever. I've traveled the world, and I've looked, never have. So I am blessed. We are blessed. We are blessed. Okay, he says, the living entities are impregnated into this material nature. And as a result of their past deeds, they take different positions, lives. Can you be something other than human? Oh yeah. You can be a plant, an animal, an insect, a butterfly. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That's evolution. Evolution is spiritual in nature. Evolution is consciousness. It's not physical. It's consciousness. So you go into another body on a higher level of consciousness. That's evolution. The highest level of consciousness that you can attain in this world is human birth, my friends. The most valuable and the most difficult to achieve birth is that of a human. And guess what? You have it. So, way to go. Well done. But the question is, what will you do with it? He continues, thus the activities of this material world begin. The activities of the different species of living beings are begun from the very moment of creation. Well, that's news. That's a news flash. It is not that all is evolved. The different species of life are created immediately along with the universe. All at once. Men, animals, beasts, birds, everything is simultaneously created because whatever desires the living entities had at the last annihilation of the creation are again made manifest. What's he saying? We pick up where we left off, karmically speaking, correct? You understand this point? Straightforward enough. No, I'm going to give you an example in a minute. The word used in Sanskrit is avasham, automatically, without their control. You have no control over it. there is one or two things in the world that you have no control over, as I'm sure you've realized, and that is one of them. So wherever you left off, that is where you will pick up. Even during creation, when it's still up and running and you die, next life you pick up where you left off. Correct? Is this logical? It's totally logical. What the heck else would it be? The living entities have nothing to do with this process. No, because we are riding Yantra Rudhani Mayaya, Krishna says. They are as though mounted on a machine made of material energy. Are you enjoying the machine? The material nature machine. 60-40 on that one, huh? So what's an example? Here's a really good example. 5 o'clock comes, you're at work, been working all day, doing your job, doing your duty, and you're right in the middle of a project, or you're right in the middle of this and that. So what you do? Maybe you tidy a few things up, you lock the front door of the business, of the office, or say goodbye to your fellow workers, and you go home for the night, right? And do whatever you do. Eat, sleep, visit your loved ones. And then tomorrow morning at 8 or 9 o'clock, your day begins again, your work day. What do you do? Do you not pick up where you left off? Do you not go back and do your project and continue where you left off? Isn't that what competent, thoughtful workers do? We all do that, don't we? It's the same with creation. It's the same. Not hard to understand, really. Now, being long-winded as I normally am, I have to sort of cut to the chase here with, I'm going to give a short version of the Vedic version of creation. Now, we already talked about John Milton and why creation was made from that point of view. So we're down here because we didn't want to abide by God's rules in the kingdom of God, so to speak. So he says, no problem. You don't have to. I have a place for you. It's not here. Okay? It's down there. You can go there and you can knock yourself out. You can become the center of the universe. You can try to get everybody to revolve around you. You can become the sun. How's that? Okay, yeah, good. I'm gonna give that a shot. Here we all are. The center of our little orbit. Some of us are a little more successful at it than others, supposedly. Right? That's what we're doing. So when it's time for creation, physical, material creation, Vishnu is God. Vishnu means he who lives everywhere. Now listen to this story. You aren't going to believe it, or you are going to believe it. Because it is, you couldn't make this stuff up. It's from the Vedas. Vishnu lies down on the causal ocean. What is the causal ocean? It is a body of water between the spiritual realm and the material realm. He lies down in yoga nidra. What is yoga nidra? Mystic sleep. Mystic sleep. What does he do? He dreams the creation. And how does he go about it? He goes into this mystic sleep, and from each and every pore of his body, just like you see little specks of dust in the sunlight coming through the screen door in the summer, correct? He breathes out, one breath only. As he exhales, through the pores come millions and millions of universes. Universes, not planets. Oh my God, that's not possible. You mean your eyes don't believe it, or your mind, or... Who talks like this? Who comes up with this? That's what he does. Then what happens? That's the first manifestation of Vishnu, called what? Mahavishnu. Ever heard of Mahavishnu? You must have. Famous term. Then his second manifestation of Vishnu is called Garbhadakshini Vishnu. He enters in a separate manifestation of Vishnu, of God, into each and every universe. It says that half the universe is filled with water, just like a big globe. And he lies down upon the water. And guess what happens now? It's even more hard to wrap your mind around than what I told you a moment ago. He's again in his mystic slumber. And from his navel, an umbilicus sprouts. You know the umbilical cord? You ever heard of that? Yeah, well, you wouldn't be here without one, let me tell you. So the umbilical cord sprouts from his navel, but it isn't an umbilical cord, it's a lotus stem. I love it. I love that. Who thinks like that? I don't know anybody that thinks like that, except him. That's why I love him. And through the stem of the lotus are all 14 planetary systems. There are 14. Oh my God. Dormancy. Then the lotus unfolds, and the creator of all the various manifestations of life in the universe appears upon the lotus. Who's that? Brahma, the creator. That's a position. Like Taoiseach or Prime Minister, or it's a position. Find a soul who has the qualifications and the desire to take on this position. He will be the Brahma in each universe. One soul for each universe is the creator. So Brahma opens his eyes and goes, oh my God, it's black. It's black everywhere. It's pitch. What the? I'm sitting on a lotus. What's going on? He doesn't know. But he knows instinctively that he must meditate in his heart until his purpose is revealed to him. What do you think?
Should all do that?
We should all do that. Shouldn't we all do that? That's what he does, because he doesn't know why he's there and what his purpose is. So does he panic and start running around? No, he does not. He begins to meditate for, they say, like 1,000 years, but these are Brahma years. I don't want to start overtaxing your brain here at this stage. Then he realizes God within his heart, and realizing God in his heart, he becomes enlightened as to what to do and what his purpose is, which is to create all the various forms of life in the universe. Okay? That's what he realizes. Then he does that. He begins to do it. We already told you that all of this is just going to be continued from before. There's no Darwinian process of evolution that can't be proved. Then there's a third manifestation of Vishnu, and that is Chiradakshini Vishnu. So you have all the planets. You have Brahmaloka or Satyaloka. That's the highest planet in the universe. Where are we in the scheme of things? We're in the middle. Earthly planet. Bhur Bhuva. We're in Bhur Bhuva. We're in earthly form. Right in the middle. Neither too high nor too low. A little taste of heaven, a little taste of hell, and a lot of stuff in between. That's where we are. But in higher planets is where you have the very realized souls, realized sages, saints, etc. Above where Brahma lives, Brahmaloka, is what they call the ocean of milk. And Vishnu again lies down as this third manifestation of Vishnu upon the ocean of milk. And what does he do? Once Brahma has created all of these, well, I don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, he enters into each and every being. God in the heart. God in the heart. Is God in your heart? So if Brahma can meditate on God in his heart and become realized, can you not do this? Of course you can. Of course you can. Should you? I think it's a good idea. Okay? That's what happens. And Vishnu is there as that third manifestation. Okay? And when the demigods, the people who run the universe, get into trouble, and they do, naturally, from time to time, they go up to the ocean of milk and they pray on the shore of the ocean of milk, because Vishnu's out there in the ocean someplace. Oh Lord, please help us. We're helpless and we screwed up again because we have the cheating propensity and the tendency to commit mistakes. And Vishnu says, okay, that's the problem. And he solves it. In his own time. Not maybe today, but when he does, right? Okay, I was going to tell you more about... I'll just do this briefly here. Very briefly. So the whole creation is manifest in one breath of Mahavishnu. One breath, my friends. Guess what happens when he inhales? We're done. We're finished. We all go back in the body of God into a state of suspended animation and dormancy until the next creation. Okay. I like it. Give me a time frame here. I mean, what are we dealing with? A couple thousand years? 100,000? What are we doing? There are four yugas or ages in the universe. Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Iron Age, Current Age, Iron Age, Age of Quarrel and Hypocrisy, in case you hadn't noticed. And these four yugas or ages go in cycles. Oh, cycles. Isn't it interesting how everything is cyclical, just like the seasons and the creation? Right? Now, in the Lord Brahma lives for 400 years, according to Brahma time, not human time. So in the 12 hours of his day, according to the cycle of the yugas, it equals 4,320,000,000 human years during Brahma's day. His night is of the same duration. This is day and night. He lives 100 years. Wrap your mind around it. And then what? That means the four yugas rotating 1,000 times comprise one day of Brahma and the same one night. 100 of such years, then he dies. Alright? By Earth calculations, what are we looking at here for a lifetime of Brahma? 311,040,000,000,000 Earth years. So, we can hardly blame you if you can't wrap your mind around it, because you've come and gone how many times? A lot. Who talks like this? Who has a time scale like this? Even the government doesn't have time scales like this. nor does science. So they like to give you these big numbers. They don't know. Believe me. How do I know they don't know? Because scientific theories and conjecture keep changing. Have you heard this one? The earth is flat. You ever heard that one? That was very much in vogue back in the days. Earth is flat. And some guy came up with, he says, hey, the earth's round. Well, this guy almost got tarred and feathered and carried out of town on a rail. How dare you say such a thing? Whatever theory they come up with. Okay, let's give them some credit. Sometimes they hit on a couple of things that are eternal, universal truths. They'll stick. But a lot of the theories only last for a short time. You don't believe me? Study scientific history. Okay, wrap it up. The human life is the boat, the best boat there is to cross the ocean of birth and death. And if you find enlightened souls who can guide you and help you, a guru figure, then they are like the person at the helm to help your boat, your little boat, cross the ocean. And the favorable breezes are compared to the facilities that we have as humans. If we do not fully utilize our lives for self-realization, then we are considered to be Atmaha, killer of the soul, neglecter of the soul. We could easily then take another birth and live in a very hellish circumstance. What does that mean? Deep into Iraq, into Somalia. Deep into where's all our stuff going on now? Iran, Nigeria, Syria. Is this not hell? Are those people not living in hell? Ask them. That's hell. You don't want a birth like that. So, the conclusion, God alone, Krishna alone, maintains all beings. The sooner we realize that, the better off we are. You say, well, I don't like to think about God as Krishna. But think about God how you like to think about God. That's fine. But think about God. Don't hold God hostage because of certain religions and their practices, okay? So, God is the Father, in the best sense. And what does the Father want for his family? Tell me, what does the Father want for his family? Only the best. Doesn't he? Why? Because he loves them. Because he loves them. And he derives great pleasure out of his relationship with his family and his children. And he wants to look after them. Is this not love? That's it. It's that simple. Not complex, yeah? So, that's the truth about creation. Some of you might agree, some of you may disagree, that's fine. I only ask you to consider. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Are there any questions? Yes.
In the night sky, there's one star, and it doesn't move. And looking at the little clouds, if you come around the clouds, the clouds are cloud.
Is it the North Star?
The North Star.
Yeah, Pole Star.
What is Pole Star?
Pole Star, according to the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is the axis upon which the entire universe, all the stars and planets, move around Mount Meru. Now, that's a big, long, and involved and technical explanation, but that's what it is. The entire universe, just like you see the backdrop of stars and constellations, it keeps moving, doesn't it? If you look at it at night, and then you look at it just early in the morning before sunrise, the whole thing's changed, no? But they still maintain their relationships and their distances from each other. Same, nighttime after nighttime. Correct? So the whole thing is moving on the axis, and the pole star is the central point of that axis. North. Due north. Any other questions?
I wonder there, you were talking about birth here and gone. Birth, like, could you give an explanation about rebirth? Like, is it a gradual process, or is it just like there is like?
You mean after death?
No, just rebirth. Like, you hear people what about like they're after being reborn? Like,
yeah, you mean from the time they die until they're reborn? Is that what you mean?
Oh, like living rebirth. Like, do you know what I mean?
Christian, born again.
Born again? Is that what you mean?
Just rebirth, like.
Okay, I understand.
Is it gradual or?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about spiritual rebirth, you know, even in the Bible it says that there, I think Jesus said, unless a man be born again of water and the Spirit, he shall not enter the kingdom of God. What does that mean? We have a birth, we come out of the womb of the mother, that's a physical birth. The spiritual birth is like a spiritual initiation. In the Catholic religion, it is called what? Confirmation. Correct? So one must have a spiritual rebirth to be born again as a soul, to realize that you are spiritual in nature. So in that sense, you've got a physical and a spiritual birth.
Is it the death of the ego and then
yes.
Rebirth
from? Well, we hope, you know, killing the ego off is a lifetime pursuit. The ego is like an entrenched animal guarding the junkyard, an entrenched dog, and he ain't going to give up any territory for no one, nothing. You know the ego, and especially the male ego. Yes, ladies, I know, you know, I know too. Ain't nothing like the male ego. Hard to whittle that one down. You know what they say in the Tao? The male ego is a big, huge rock right smack in the middle of the river. Right? And the water is the most beautiful example of the feminine energy. Is she? Where does she seek? The lowest place possible. The bottom of the valley. That's where rivers are. Bottom of the canyon. And what does she do? Hey, you big eagle, you big rock. Move. Does she do that? No, she doesn't. She goes, oh, pardon me. Excuse me. I'm just going to go this way. I'm going to go that way. You won't even notice me. And after about 200 years, what happens? Ain't no rock anymore. He's gone. Ladies, please take this lesson seriously. This is how you do it. I know, patience is a virtue. You cannot come up against the male ego like this. You're not a man. You must be a woman and do it in a womanly way, which is the art of surrender and compromise. You say, I don't want to surrender or compromise. Well, then wait till your next life when you're a man, okay? And you can carry the male ego around like a rock on your back. See how you like it. Well, this is way better. Okay. Okay, anything else?
The physical death that takes place.
Yeah.
The choice made by the soul to leave one body to go to another.
Well, no. It's explained in the Vedas that when somebody is born, they have a pre-arranged, predetermined number of what?
Breaths.
Breaths. So what do we know that the yogis do? In the Himalayas and other places, what do yogis do? If you practice Ashtanga Yoga and Pranayama, They withhold the breath. They drill the breath. Prana, breath, yama, control. They breathe in, and they get to the point where they can hold the breath. Maybe you can hold the breath for 4 beats. Well, they can hold the breath for hours. And then expel the breath. It takes a long time to be able to do that. So what would that mean for the number of breaths that you have? That's why yogis live for 100, 200, 300, 400 years.
There's one question there again. Do you think the breath is really important for a lot of stress related, like?
Well, breath work and drilling the breath is very good for reducing stress. There's no question about that.
A lot of problems that we have, like, we say, we need answers, like, but just teach the basic breath, like, we all forget about it.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
So you're
what we recommend here more is chanting Hare Krishna, the name of God, but no, the breath is vital. Yeah.
So you have a finite amount of breaths that are...
You have a finite amount of breaths, and when your breaths are up, you can make a deal with the devil. It's still not going to help you.
27 million breaths a year we have.
Yeah, well, if you're a jogger, you got a lot less, okay?
So what determines the next life? I mean, who determines...
Your action. Karma. And your desire. That determines your next life. Whatever you did in this life, good, bad, and in between, you will have to suffer or enjoy the effects of that karma in your next life. That is karma. And then whatever desires you may have at the point of death, the point of death is an extremely important point, my friends. Please take this advice. Do not go to sleep. Do not snooze through your death. Stay awake and be conscious of God and your relationship to God. If you have one material desire, what's a material desire? Connected to the body. Connected to what we do down here. Oh, geez, I just wish I said this earlier. I could just have done this one thing. No problem. Get him a body. Put him in a different body. Put him in a different country. So you can fulfill your desire. What if you've got 10,000 material desires? Well, you're going to be here a while, my friend. There is no hurry for you, because you'll be taking birth after birth after birth after birth until until you stop enjoying yourself down here in the material world. You give up your envy. Envy. Enmity. Enemy. If God is love, is there room for envy? No. If somebody who envies you tells you they love you, do they love you? No, exactly. I'm saying it, sir. I'm saying it. They may love you in certain ways.
Are you very sure? Like,
I am very sure. Yeah, totally sure. But you don't have to be sure. You can use your intelligence and your discretion to determine whether anything I've said is worth believing or worth considering.
Well, not ever true. It's only explanations and...
No, you're not listening.
I'm listening very much.
No, you're not listening.
You're telling me I'm not listening. I'm listening very much.
I told you at the beginning that the Vedas are aparushita. They come from the spiritual world. And now you're taking them and putting them in a realm of relativity. They don't fit here.
But you say scientists are verified, right? So you don't believe in scientists, this and that. Like your contradiction, you're a bit of yourself sometimes.
You know, I respect your opinion, my friend. You don't have to agree with me. I'm not attached.
You said a lot of nice things today. I must admit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't expect you to accept what I say just because I say it. I expect you to use your intelligence, and I respect that.
Yeah,
well,
people want to believe it when you say you're 100% sure. Like,
well, just because I'm 100% sure doesn't mean the next person is. Why can't I be sure?
You're saying you're 100% sure. That's giving an impression of, like, the right thing.
Well, you can give the next lecture and you can show them how much you're sure and how much you're not sure.
Well, I'm never telling you before.
No, I'm only talking about myself. Okay? I'm talking from my point of view, my experience, and my realization.
Their experience, I'd like to hear your experience.
Well, we don't have time for all that right now. Anyway, you don't have to agree with me. Ishwar?
You mentioned about the 13 caps. And when we met, one of the things that came from the dish.
Yeah.
And prior to that, we had very
friendly. Yeah, I know.
But that happened. Everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this lady who was the author, the writer. She was a Muslim. And she couldn't believe that she couldn't visit a Hindu place.
Yeah.
And she wrote a temple after the Hindu studies. And they criticized it. And they had the houses. And in the article, she said to the elder, I don't know how they can object to me visiting my Hindu friends.
Yeah.
And yet, in the Quran, they still teach that the earth is flat. Even up to now, in the Quran, they still teach that the earth is flat. It just shows how ignorant they are, how practical they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So, glad I touched a nerve. That's what I like to do. And I hope I opened your mind a little bit for consideration. I thank you for your kind attention. We went a little longer than we expected to, one of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.